Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Following the Evidence by Lynn Shannon. Bringing a tracking dog to town put her in a killer's sights. Inheriting a ranch is a fresh start for Emma Pierce, her baby, and her search and rescue dog, until someone tries to kill her. But Sheriff Reed Atkinson won't let anyone hurt his first love, especially when they uncover a connection to his vanished sister. Can Reed solve both cases before he loses his sister and the woman he's falling for all over again?
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today I'm talking with Lynn Shannon. She writes novels that combine intriguing mysteries with heartfelt romance. Raised in Texas, she believes pecans and bluebell ice cream are must-haves for every household, and I'm with you 100% on the ice cream, Lynn. So welcome to my show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So, now, I have to ask, I was raised in Southern Virginia, you're raised in Texas. Is it pecan? How do you say it?
I think it depends on where you are in Texas, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Some people say pecan, some people say pecan. So it just depends, I think. I've heard it both ways, and I think it just depends on where in Texas you are.
So how do you say it?
I say pecan, but my parents are actually originally from New York.
Ah.
So I moved to Texas when I was very young. I was like 6 weeks old when we moved to Texas, so I was raised there. But I take a lot of inflection. I don't have a very Southern accent, and I think that's because my parents are from New York, so I take a lot of inflection from them. And people do ask me, were you really born in Texas? No, I was not. So, you know, Southerners, Texans can tell that
yes.
I'm not actually, that my parents are not Texans.
Right. Yeah, no, like I said, I grew up in Southern Virginia, and depending on who I'm talking to, I don't have a really strong Southern accent, which is funny because my parents were born and raised in Kentucky. Why I don't have a twang, nobody knows, but they certainly don't. But some of the way I phrase things and say them, you can definitely tell I'm Southern. I swear, my poor husband, he's raised in Northern Virginia, which might as well be a totally different state, if you know anything about Virginia, because we're right, you know, near Washington, D.C., and Northern Virginia is very different from the southern part of the state. And I say these phrases, and I can't think of any right now, and he's like, what are you talking about? Where did you grow up? It's just kind of funny. So I love to, and I've used them sometimes in my writing, and some of my crit partners are like, we don't know what you're talking about. And I realize, oh, I've just used an obscure Southern phrase, and nobody knows what I'm talking about. So sometimes I'm like, can I educate people because it's kind of a cool thing, or should I just delete it? So I'm sure you probably have the same kind of thing. We all do. We all have things that, you know, maybe our parents said that's not, like, well-known, and trying to figure out, do we keep it in our writing? Do we not? How do you handle this?
Well, sometimes I don't even realize that I've done it. Somebody else points it out to me. And
yeah, me too.
Like, what are you talking about? Like, sometimes freeway and highway.
Oh, yeah.
Like, sometimes people are like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, that's what we call a highway. No, it's called a freeway in other areas, so they don't know what I'm discussing. And I think for me, I can get away with it a little bit more because most of my books take place in Texas.
Okay.
So I can get away with it a little bit more because it looks authentic, right?
Right.
It's like people would go and Google it and say, what is that phrase or whatever? And they would find out that it's a Texas phrase or a Southern phrase, and then I can get away with it a little bit more. But with my husband, he's actually Greek, and sometimes I say things and he has no idea what I'm talking about. Yesterday I told him, I was like, you have a bee in your bonnet, and he was like, what are you bee in your bonnet about? And he's like, what are you saying? I'm like, you're upset about something, what are you upset about?
Yes. Yeah, I've had many, and just so you know, it's not just someone who maybe was raised in another country. I have those conversations, not as often now since we've been married 20 years, but I've had those conversations with my husband, and we were born in the same state, Lynn.
That's so funny.
Yeah, which is just kind of funny, but yeah, I find it interesting to see how different phrases, you know, evolve or you use them. And sometimes I think my poor kids, I wish I could remember exactly what it was, but it was some phrase, very old-fashioned. My parents were older when they had me, older back when they had me. Now it's like everyone's having kids the same, you know, in their 30s, but nobody was back then, and I was kind of the caboose on the sibling train there. And, you know, I feel like I use a lot of old-fashioned words and phrases, and, you know, my poor kids are like, Mom, why are you doing this stuff?
I tell them that it's good for them, that I'm expanding their vocabulary.
Yes.
If I didn't use these difficult words, they wouldn't know them because they're not really something that you would use in everyday conversation unless you were from that particular area. So it's good for them to hear words that they wouldn't normally have in conversation.
Oh, yeah, and we're all a reading family. So, you know, that too, we have a reading vocabulary and always talking about words and usage, which is it's just kind of fun, I think, to have those conversations with our kids. You know, I figured you're going to leave my house knowing two things, good table manners, no chewing with your mouth open, and knowing how to construct a sentence. Whether you actually use that's up to you, but dadgummit, you're going to know it.
Yes, and being readers. I mean, for me, raising my kids to be readers was super important because I see a lot of kids are not readers.
Mm.
And I was very worried that my kids would not be readers, even though I'm a big reader. You know, you just never know. Not everyone in my family, for example, not all my siblings are readers.
Right.
And so I was worried that you can't always control it. Sometimes you just have to keep trying to introduce it over and over again in the hopes that they will catch on and love it. And that was one thing I really wanted them to be, was good big readers.
Yeah, no, I agree entirely. And I think one of the things that we found helpful as a family was just that they saw us reading. We went to the library like once a week. Mm-hmm. Actually, everyone's really missing the library. Our area of Virginia is still closed. We're recording this for my listeners in late May. So we've not been able to go to the library for weeks. It's been killing us. And, you know, just that, you know, the love of books, I was more concerned with that than teaching my kids to read.
Yes, having a love of books is a big one because I think it just opens so many worlds for them and it increases their vocabulary. I mean, it's a lifelong thing that they'll carry all the way through with them. And I really, it was so important for me to kind of encourage that in them. And I'm very lucky because both my kids are big readers now. My son, it took a little bit longer than my daughter, but I finally hooked him. I finally found a genre that he's in love with. And then once I kind of hooked him into a genre, he's turned into quite the bookworm.
Yes, yeah. I think that's important to kind of expose kids to a lot of different genres because you don't know what's going to click.
Yep.
You know, and it's interesting, you know, of course, I read a lot of romantic suspense since that's what I write, but I also read a lot of just general mystery, biographies, nonfiction, you know, I try to read a variety. I wish I could read more. More.
I know.
I keep seeing these memes, all this time to read. I'm like, who are you and what life do you have? Because, you know, they're not going anywhere. I'm like, yeah, this is still my same life. It's just like everyone's home now.
Yes, and writing has been so hard. Just carrying on like actual work while everyone's at home, I love them to pieces. My family, I love them to bits. But sometimes I'm just like, shh, go away.
I know.
I love you, go away.
I'm recording this in my office, which is kind of has no windows. It's downstairs. The door is closed. But upstairs, which thank goodness nobody can hear. It's like pandemonium, like elephants are racing back and forth. Some kid is screaming. I mean, it's like, I'm like, oh my goodness.
I know. And my kids are older. And so what actually ends up happening is they're not like really loud. They just, between my two kids and my husband, they cycle through about every 10 minutes.
Mm.
And different person will come in the office and interrupt me to ask me something or talk to me about something. And then, you know, I'll get rid of that person and I'll have about 10 minutes of peace and quiet. And then someone else will come in and be like, hey, let me tell you about this. And I'm like, go away.
Yeah.
Sign my door that says, do not enter. Stay away from me.
Yeah. When my kids were, I've always worked from home, Lynn. And when my kids were little, I used to, when my husband was home and so he could keep an eye on them, I used to hang a necklace on the door. If the necklace was there, they couldn't come in. If it was gone, yeah, they could come in. Or some, I can't remember, maybe the signal was reversed, but it was something like that. That helped a lot. I think you need something. You need a system.
Yes, I think I need a system of, unless the house is burning down or someone is bleeding, we do not enter. Yeah, I know, I need to come up with something. But quarantine has been kind of a weird thing because, you know, up until now, they were at school. So my husband would go to work, my kids were at school. I had like kind of the morning that I really just had to myself, that I could write, do the things that I need to do. So when they would interrupt me in the afternoon, it wasn't such a big deal because I was doing more administrative things.
Right, right.
So that was things that you could have interruptions for and it would be fine. But writing is one of those things, at least for me, I don't like to be interrupted a whole lot because it kind of jars me out of the story and then I have to get back into the story and then keep going. It's much easier to stay inside the scene for,
I know, because you get in that zone in your, you know, you're writing, you're like into the characters, and then somebody, and especially those of us, you know, since we're writing romantic suspense, it's either a very tender moment or it's a, oh my goodness, somebody just took a shot at my hero moment.
Yeah.
And so, and then I've had kids that are, I'm like, wait a minute, who are you and why are you interrupting me? They're about to kiss. Come on, it's our first kiss. Leave me alone.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So, how is the, well, let's talk a little bit more about writing. Do you, and we talk a little bit about the frustration of trying to write in quarantine, and this is not, you're not the only writer, I've talked to that's been like, either it's been harder to find the, internal motivation, like everyone's just kind of off our game, or because the family's all home, you're like, oh my goodness, the interruptions. About that. But what do you find most rewarding about writing romantic suspense? Let's talk about the positives of writing in our genre.
Oh, there's always something happening. I mean, it's one of the challenges of writing romantic suspense is that you have many threads that you're pulling at the same time because you have the romance, the mystery, suspense, and then the faith element. So you have those three that you have to interweave all together. But I love the fact that there's never a dull moment. There's never like a moment where you're kind of like, eh, I'm not crazy about this. There's always something that's happening. You're always pushing all of that forward. And I really love it. It's one of the genres that it's my first go-to when I pick up a book to read. And it's just the first thing that I was drawn to when I was writing because I love it so much. I just love that solving the mystery, the action, the danger, and then the hero and heroine who fall in love along the way. I just think it's so much fun to read and to write.
Yes, no, I obviously I agree because I love writing romantic suspense as well. And I think I didn't start out writing it. I don't know what I wrote in the beginning. We're not even going to talk about those books that will never see the light of day, but that's okay. We all have those. Good practice. My practice books. You know, but I do like it. It's very challenging as a writer to think. And I find out my subconscious really helps me out because I don't know about you, Lynn, but I mean, I've, you know, tend to sort of plan my, I need to plan more, but I've been more of a pantser, trying to become more of a plotter. But regardless, sometimes I'll realize, oh, yeah, I need to put this in there because it ties back into that. And I didn't even realize I had done that thread, like subconsciously. It just kind of happened. I'm like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. So,
yes, I've actually learned to plot only about a third. Only the first few, I plot a few chapters at a time and then go on to the next few chapters. And the reason I do that is because I realize that either whatever I thought in my head doesn't translate to paper and I have to try and rework it. I have too much I'm trying to jam too much into a scene, for example.
Right.
And I need to separate them out or slow it down. Or if I if I plot too far ahead, then sometimes a lot of things while I'm writing, it's like what you're saying, your subconscious figures out, oh, this is a better direction to take this. Or you get an idea while you're writing that's just so much better than you thought, mm-hmm. the original idea you thought you were going with. So I've kind of learned to plot. I plot like my heroine and my hero and kind of the romantic conflict. And I generally, I always know who I want the villain to be, but I will admit that I have changed the villain a few times in a book at the end, because I've always gone back and been like, I don't think that's good enough. I think I can make it better. I think I can make this person the villain and it'll work so much better. And my goal is always to be able to have at least two or three villains that it could be. So when I get to the end of a book, I can always pick one that I think this is the least likely one to have it been. You know, to have be
right,
the villain.
Right.
It's the one that the readers won't be expecting at all. And then I can do it. But sometimes you can't see that until you get to the end of the book.
Yes, I agree. And sometimes, though, like I'm nearing the end of a rough draft for a book now, and I'm like, yes, but I have to tie up the non, you know, why it wasn't this person, but why it is this person. And sometimes I split them. You know, it was like part of it was this person, but most of it was this person, the person that nobody expected. But I tried to, you know, leave those rabbit trails in there and get those clues and have the hero, the heroine kind of hinting that maybe it's not as simple as everyone thought it was.
Yeah, well, I think also in the, especially in love-inspired suspense books, because there's so much action, because there's so much danger, it makes it easier if you have more than one villain in the end, or at least a villain and a couple of henchmen to help you out, because
yes.
it makes it easier to have all these people. Otherwise, it's so hard to have them being shot at and being chased, and it's difficult for only one person to be able to do all of that.
Right, yeah, exactly. So what do you wish readers knew about the romantic suspense genre?
How hard it is to write.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I'm very jealous sometimes because I hear other authors talk about how they can write a book in a week. And I just think, never.
Yeah.
Never. It will never happen. I mean, maybe there are romantic suspense authors that can write in a week. And, you know, more power to them. That's amazing. I wish I could do that. I just can't. I spend a lot of time thinking about the books and what can I do differently and how can I twist it to be something that the reader's not expecting. And that takes a lot of time and energy, and it's very difficult to weave all those threads all together. And I think I didn't realize how hard they were to write until I started writing them myself. And then I was like, oh, this is so much harder than I thought.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, because it's not just a romance and it's not just suspense. I mean, it is, and you have to make sure that your lead characters, your hero and heroine, you know, have time to build their relationship a little bit so that at the end it's believable that they're together, because we're all about happy endings. You know, the crime is solved, the hero and heroine are together in some form, shape or form. And, you know, which I think, you know, it's very satisfying for readers, and I think we all need that closure in our life. But it's hard to, you know, you have to make sure that you have that balance, because sometimes I think it'll be easier just to, you know, ignore the romance. I tend to write the suspense and then go back and beef up the romance on the rough draft.
I actually think I tend to do the same, where I get into the suspense, and then sometimes I have to go back and be like, no, you have to make moments for them to really connect so that they can fall in love, so that their love story feels believable. You have to connect emotionally for them.
Right. I'm always more concerned about, for me, it's easier to go back and add the romance than it is easier than it would be to go back and add the suspense. So
100%, I agree with that.
Yeah, well, we are almost out of time, Lynn. Is there anything else you wish our readers would know about you or your writing?
No, thanks for having me on the podcast. I really enjoyed talking with you, and I hope that the readers love the new book that I have coming out with Love Inspired Suspense.
Yes, well, thank you again for being my guest. You have been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and I've been talking to Lynn Shannon. She writes novels that combine intriguing mysteries with heartfelt romance, and you can find out how to connect with her with the notes for this podcast. Stay tuned for a brief excerpt from her newest book, Following the Evidence.
Now an excerpt from Following the Evidence by Lynn Shannon. She entered Lily's room. The glow from the nightlight glimmered off the little girl's hair and the curve of her cheek. Emma picked up her daughter, nestling the child's face against her shoulder. Lily stirred, but thankfully remained sleeping. As silent as a ghost, Emma flew to her sister-in-law's room. "Vivian," she hissed. The other woman muttered something in her sleep. Emma placed Lily down gently on the bed before shaking Vivian awake. When her sister-in-law opened her eyes, Emma held a finger to her lips. "I think someone's in the house." Vivian's eyes widened and her body went stiff. "Take Lily into the bathroom and lock the door." Emma pressed her cell phone into the other woman's hand. "Speed dial 1 is the sheriff's office. Deputies are on the way, but you should call them again." Vivian grabbed her wrist. "Where are you going?" "To check it out." Emma secretly hoped whatever had caused Sadie's reaction wasn't cause for serious alarm, but she wasn't taking any chances. Vivian's gaze dropped to the taser in Emma's hand.
"Please, be careful."
She gave a sharp jerk of her head.
"Bathroom."
Vivian flew into motion. Within moments, the bathroom door clicked closed. Before leaving the room, Emma rested her hand against Sadie's head. The dog's fur was soft against her fingertips. Sadie glanced at her, and she could almost hear the animal's thoughts.
"Take me with you."
"Stay," Emma whispered.
"Guard."
If there was an intruder in the house and he managed to get past Emma, he would have to go through Sadie to hurt Lily or Vivian. The Labrador mix would fight to the death to protect her family, especially Lily. She'd been trained to. Emma slipped out into the hall on silent footsteps. Her heart pounded against her ribcage. Possibilities played in her mind, the images flashing like her own personal scary movie. She was no innocent country girl. She knew full well the horrors people could inflict on one another. As a search and rescue volunteer, she'd seen it up close and personal.
"Father, please help me be strong. Give me the ability to protect my family if necessary."
She paused at the top of the stairs. Her senses were on high alert. Warm, moist air washed over her, and the rain seemed louder, like a door or window was open. She swallowed hard and gripped the gun a bit tighter before edging her way down the staircase. Bang! She jumped and bit back a shriek. Her hands went numb. The wind screamed through the house, rattling the window panes. Bang! Bang! Trembling, she took a deep breath and rounded the banister. The sound was coming from the kitchen. She raced down the dark hall, her slippers silent against the wood floor. She paused at the entrance of the kitchen and peeked around the doorframe. One of the large glass panes on her bay window was broken, the shards scattered across the tile floor. The wind screeched again, rocking a cabinet door forward before slamming it closed. Water from the rain mixed with the glass on the floor. Was that? She stepped forward and caught a glimpse of leaves on the floor. A tree branch. Heady relief washed over her. No one had broken into the house. The storm's high winds had simply thrown a branch through the glass. She lowered the taser. A streak of lightning lit up the kitchen, making it as bright as midday. Emma saw them a fraction too late. Muddy boot prints. Something moved out of the corner of her eye. Emma spun. The taser flew from her hand, and a cookie jar on the counter exploded as the intruder tackled her.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhamakerfiction.com.